Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Something's wrong because my mind is fading. And everywhere I look, there's a dead end waiting. Temperature is dropping at the rotten oasis. Stealing kisses from the leprous faces. Heads are hanging from the garbage man trees. Mouthwash, jukebox, gasoline. Pistols are pointing at a port.
At about 1:30, container ship struck the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which I've been over many, many times commuting from the state of Delaware in our trainer by car. Been in Baltimore Harbor many times.
This is President Biden yesterday, of course, doing a press conference. Well, statement. I mean, he took questions, yelled at him, but didn't really take questions. It was about 5 minutes long. He talked, of course, about the horrible bridge collapse took place in Baltimore yesterday. And do I start with this? This is the first thing he said. One more time, in case you weren't paying attention, listen closely.
At about 1:30, a container ship struck the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which I've been over many, many times commuting from the state of Delaware in our trainer by car. Been in Baltimore Harbor many times.
How do you cross the Francis Scott Key Bridge? Many times over the years? By train or by car? Anybody know how you cross the Francis Scott Key Bridge in reality world? It's not connected to Joe Biden's strange memories of things that don't happen. By car. There's no rail line there. It's only a car bridge. There are some bridges in the world that are both. It's not that common, but it's common enough. This bridge is just a car bridge. You've seen the video. You've seen the pictures. You see a rail line? There's no rail line. Why is he mentioning himself? Why is he inserting himself into this? Why is he making up? Okay, we'll just move on. It's in the grand scheme of Biden errors, gaffes, and weirdnesses, this is a pretty low grade. But, you know, there you go. But on to more substantial things.
The bridge collapsed, sending several people and vehicles into the water, into the river. And multiple U.S. Coast Guard units, which are stationed very nearby, thank God, were immediately deployed along with local emergency personnel.
Yeah, thank God they were close. Absolutely.
Officials at the scene estimate 8 people were unaccounted for still. Not still, were unaccounted for. That number might change. 2 have been rescued, 1 without injury, 1 in critical condition. And the search and rescue operation is continuing for all those remaining as we speak.
Unfortunately, since that update, they have called off the rescue efforts because they are convinced that of the 8 people who were on the bridge, a pothole repair crew that did not get word that the boat was coming, they stopped traffic from coming across the boat. I mean, there were cars. Some of the video is you have cars, vehicles going across that bridge like 30 seconds before the thing hits. But the crew of the ship, realizing that they were out of power, or power was coming on and off, and that they had lost control of their vessel and it might be a danger to the bridge, called the authorities, and the authorities shut down either end of the bridge, which is amazing, and prevented more loss of life. The pothole repair crew was either not able to be notified or not able to be notified in time, and I think the report is that they were maybe on a break of some kind, and so in any case, all 8 fell in, 2 were rescued, 1 needed to go to the hospital, 1 did not, and the other 6 are presumed to be dead. At this point,
everything so far indicates that this was a terrible accident. At this time, we have no other indication, no other reason to believe there's any intentional act here.
Right. And I mean, again, it's fairly early. And I am always of the opinion that you shouldn't say anything until you know. You shouldn't say it doesn't seem like this. You shouldn't say it doesn't seem like that. You shouldn't say anything until you really have good evidence. But in fairness, the statement, it seems to be this and doesn't have any evidence that it's anything else, I mean, it's okay. And I know everybody wants to come out and say, you know, something wasn't a terrorist attack or something wasn't. And I get that. And I know for a news guy, it's kind of weird to be the one who says, let's just not talk about something until we know something, because a lot of us professionally, when we're dealing with breaking news, feel like we have to say something. And that's also just kind of a problem of the business environment of news. But yeah, I just don't think you should say much until you know more. It's frustrating when the police, for example, tell you the investigation's underway, can't say much. But investigation's underway, you can't say much is better than saying, well, we think it's this and turns out to be not that, right? Okay.
Personnel on board the ship were able to alert the Maryland Department of Transportation that they had lost control of their vessel, as you all know and reported. As a result, local authorities were able to close the bridge to traffic before the bridge was struck, which undoubtedly saved lives.
Absolutely. There's no doubt that saved lives.
Our prayers are with everyone involved in this terrible accident and all the families, especially those waiting for the news of their loved one right now. I know every minute in that circumstance feels like a lifetime. You just don't know. It's just terrible.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the strengths of this president, I've always said this, because he's gone through grief, he is a good grief counselor, maybe sometimes too much on that direction, leaning too much in that direction. But in this case and in many other cases, that's a perfectly appropriate thing for him to say.
Incredibly grateful for the brave rescuers who immediately rushed to the scene and to the people of Baltimore. I want to say we're with you. We're going to stay with you as long as it takes. And like the governor said, you're Maryland tough, you're Baltimore strong, and we're going to get through this together. And I promise we're not leaving.
Which is exactly what the president should say. That's exactly. In fact, you know, later on in the speech, he says,
it's my intention that federal government will pay for the entire cost of reconstructing that bridge. And I expect the Congress to support my effort. This is going to take some time. The people of Baltimore can count on us, though, to stick with them at every step of the way until the port is reopened and the bridge is rebuilt.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely correct. That's first to act, get it done, take care of them. And then the reporter started yelling questions at him. One did, and then a different guy starts yelling about Israel, and he walks off because it just wasn't really relevant. But he says,
I go to Baltimore, sir, and if so, how quickly?
I do, and as quickly as I can.
So he's going to go very quickly. And then this question, which, look, you know, as I said, the problem with reporters a lot of times, problem with the news media, is this felt need to ask something no matter how dumb it is, you know, or you feel like they need a challenge. You got a challenge, because if you don't ask a challenging question, then you're not doing your job as a media. And it kind of falls in the category of my general advice to people who do what I do is just be a person, you know, be a person, be a member of the community. And a lot of times we are not. I remember back to just after the attack on NES Pensacola, and, you know, there was some just wingnut reporter from CNN who was in the press conference with the mayor, and he was, you know, oh, Mr. Mayor, what about this? Mr. Mayor, what about that? And all the rest of us from, like, the PNJ and Channel 3 and me, and we're all looking at him like, would you just go? You should just go. Do your crazy crap somewhere else, because that's not how this community works. And a lot of times I feel that way in general is, you know, people who do what I do, they just, you know, the judgment just isn't there. The internal controls aren't there like they should be. They've lost touch with just being a person, because this is about the dumbest possible question you could ask at this point and yet still be on topic, okay?
The federal government's also going to pay for the repairs. I'm just curious. This was a ship that appears to be at fault. Is there any reason to believe that the company behind the ship should be held responsible? And then also, you mentioned
that could be, but we're not going to wait for that to happen. We're going to pay for it to get the bridge rebuilt and opened.
Duh. I mean, of course. How quickly do you think that you're going to get a couple of billion dollars out of Maersk? I mean, stop it. Just be better. Of course, there's going to be an investigation into responsibility, and will they have to pay any penalty, and to what degree will they be responsible for contributing to the repair costs? Of course, but that's not how you get a thing rebuilt. You get a thing rebuilt because the president says, we're going to rebuild it, do it, and we'll figure out who pays for it later. It's just, you know, as we well know, you know, here in Pensacola with our own bridge mishaps. But back to what I think is now, after the good kudos to the ship's crew that calling 911 and getting traffic stopped and saving lives, and the sad news about the loss of six people and the rescue of two, the real story here is, and what now for Baltimore?
What's happening now? The search and rescue operation is our top priority. Ship traffic in the port of Baltimore has been suspended until further notice, and we'll need to clear that channel before the ship traffic can resume. The Army Corps of Engineers is on the spot and is going to help lead this effort to clear the channel.
This is an economic catastrophe for Baltimore. The port of Baltimore is shut down. That is a port that employs like 15,000 people. I mean, have you seen The Wire? It's Port of Baltimore, right? It's a massive operation. You're talking about millions and millions of dollars every single day going in and out of that place. It's the biggest roll-on, roll-off for automobiles in the country, and certainly in the Northeast. 52 million tons of foreign cargo in the year, $80 billion in the year that went in and out. 140,000 jobs indirectly linked, in addition to the 15,000 who actually work there, and they can't work. And all of that traffic, all of that shipping, all that cargo cannot happen until they're going to have to get the bridge dug out, you know, get all that stuff removed, and then they're going to have to clear the channel, which is certainly what the Coast Guard and the Army Corps are going to do. But this is massive.
The Port of Baltimore is one of the nation's largest shipping hubs. And I've been there a number of times as a senator and as a vice president.
Again, who cares?
It handles a record amount of cargo last year. It's also the top port in America for both imports and exports of automobiles and light trucks. Around 850,000 vehicles go through that port every single year. And we're going to get it up and running again as soon as possible. 15,000 jobs depend on that port. And we're going to do everything we can to protect those jobs and help those workers.
Plus 30,000 cars a day that cross it. Which they will find a way around. The problem is your shipping business cannot find a way around. That's it. It's all locked behind that bridge. And the channel, which they were just, I mean, they were going in the right place to go through the channel, except that they got off track. So the spans that you saw fall, remember there's part of the bridge that did not collapse, right? Outside of the couple of main spans that did collapse, there's a whole bunch of the bridge that did not actually collapse. But the parts that collapsed are right across the channel, 50 feet deep. You just can't use it. So everything that was supposed to come in that way can't get in. Everything that is locked behind there can't get out unless they find other ways to get it out. This is it's an economic catastrophe for Baltimore.
My transportation secretary is there now. As I told Governor Moore, I've directed my team to move heaven and earth to reopen the port and rebuild the bridge as soon as humanly possible. And we're going to work hand in hand with the support of Maryland to support Maryland, whatever they ask for. We're going to work with our partners in Congress to make sure the state gets the support it needs.
So that is the, and now what's the real issue? You know, what's that going to do to the condition of the economy in Baltimore, to conditions in the Northeast that are connected to all of the shipping there? The ability to export, I think coal is one of the major exports that they send out from there, which means that other countries that import all of that energy aren't going to be able to get their energy from the U.S. in that regard. It just, you know, that is really the big story now after we're dealing with the loss of life that happened yesterday. How long will it take? Well, you know, nobody knows. As we know, it takes a little while. You know, it takes a while. Now, how long before they can get shipping traffic? You know, one would think that would be a little bit, that's obviously going to be faster than getting the bridge rebuilt. You know, getting the bridge rebuilt is a minor question compared to getting the channel cleared, which is the major question, at least economically. 437-1620, 437-1620. So other than the just kind of weird inserting of himself into the tragedy and then the, you know, mention of the train across there that doesn't exist, I think the president said what needed to be said yesterday. Reassured the people, we're going to pay for it. This is horrible. And goodbye, which is pretty much about what he should have done. 523 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
I'm getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, a Pfizer vaccine.
So am I, because I'm at risk for pneumococcal pneumonia.
If you're 19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, COPD, or heart disease, or are 65 or older, you are at increased risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Ask your doctor or pharmacist about Prevnar 20, pneumococcal 20-valent conjugate vaccine. It can help protect you against pneumococcal pneumonia in just one dose. Even if you've already been vaccinated with other pneumonia vaccines, Prevnar 20 may help provide added protection. Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
One weekend, 9 incredible events. From Molino to North Pace, from Beulah to downtown Pensacola, we have something for everyone this Easter. Join us for one of our fun-filled egg hunts on Saturday, March 3rd, or one of the powerful services on Sunday, March 31st. Discover more at PensacolaEaster.org. That's PensacolaEaster.org. Celebrate the joy of Easter with Marcus Point Baptist Church.
I've been collecting watches since around 2018. Made my first big purchase thinking that was going to be my only watch. When you're looking at watches and you're doing them online, or if you're in the secondary market, it can be scary because there's a lot of fakes. And I really do focus in on coming into an authorized dealer like Berets for any of the Omega or Breitling purchases. They will let you try it on, take pictures, go home, think about it, and just really set your mind at ease.
Come visit us at Berets Jewelers.
Hi, it's Bess Marks with Lazy Boy Home Furnishings and Decor. I want to read a little letter that I got from a wonderful friend. And she said, oh my gosh, wow, Bess, you and the Lazy Boy design team, you nailed it. We love it. We just can't believe it's ours. And that's what we call a standing ovation for our design team. Lazy Boy Home Furnishings and Decor, Mobile, Pensacola, and Spanish Fort. Just like a picture out of a magazine.
It's News Radio Pensacola on 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620, the website, the app, or your smart device. It's news on your terms.
Here's your sign.
Resulted in we're going to have a round robin tournament on Saturday, April 6th, with University of Florida, LSU, and Mississippi State. Those three soccer teams are going to come in and play a round robin day, basically a full day of activities at Ashton-Brosenham starting at 1:30. All three of the teams are going to do different, they're going to do autograph sessions for youngsters or for anyone.
Yeah, this is Commissioner Stephen Barrett at the meeting last week talking about the you know, the success of the soccer tournament that we had this past, 2 years, is that right? Oh, my God, my memory. I think we've done it 2 years now for the SEC. Maybe it's just the 1 year. I apologize for it. It's, you know, sometimes you forget things. But now another exhibition soccer match coming.
And then they're going to play a round robin soccer match that day, finishing with a kind of a championship, you know, beginning the first game at 2:30 that day and then playing a game at 6:30 that evening. So want to thank the SEC and certainly the leadership from those three universities for coming and making making a full day of it in the spring for just kind of a exhibition round robin. And it's a big deal.
Hey, that is a big deal. LSU, University of Florida, and Mississippi State coming to Ashton-Brosenham Park on April the 6th. So soccer fans, they're going to do like autograph signings, all this. I mean, that's a very good thing. Another piece of good news. Actually, I'll get to that one a little bit later. But anyway, just, you know, I know a lot of times we talk about the controversies that are going on in the commission and the various things I disagree with them about, and there are plenty. But they also do a lot of good things and don't want to neglect to mention the good stories, and that's certainly a good story. We've got David Wayne in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
Well, you just mentioned how big of an economic hit that bridge collapse is going to be in Baltimore, but officials are also saying that could disrupt global supply chains. Last year, over 47 million tons of foreign cargo passed through the Baltimore Harbor. The head of the Institute of Export and International Trade says the suspension of cargo traffic through that port could have a significant ripple effect on global supply chains. Yeah, he told the BBC News that 750,000 vehicles had moved through that harbor last year. Pro-Palestinian protesters interrupted President Biden's remarks on health care in North Carolina yesterday during an event in Raleigh. Protesters shouted, "What about health care in Gaza?" and yelled about hospitals in Gaza being bombed. Biden responded to the crowd, saying the protesters had a point and a lot more care needs to get into Gaza. And it looks like there's finally a winner in the Mega Millions lottery, a winning ticket
was
sold
you,
in
David?
New Jersey. It was not me. Mm. I'm still here and not retired today. But now lotto players are turning their attention to the Powerball jackpot, which is also up to an estimated $865 million for Wednesday.
If you won, how long before you don't show up?
You know, I don't know what else I'd do, honestly.
See, you know, that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. You know, what are you going to just sit around, you know, and do nothing? And no, but I always think, like, okay, so you got the ticket in your hand. You don't tell anybody, because don't tell anybody. Except maybe your spouse, maybe. but then, you know, I would at least want to be sure. You know,
right.
And if I were, and I think I'd probably just keep doing this because I like doing it. But, you know, maybe over time, who knows? But don't make any drastic changes right away. You know, you kind of want to, like, get the money a little first before you go quitting your job.
This right. Seems, gradual
you
know, change.
You come in with a better attitude. Maybe. Maybe you come in with a terrible attitude. I don't really need to be here anymore. I'd rather be sleeping. David, thanks so much for the update. 5:30 here on News Radio 92.3. By the way, we're going to talk to the port director, Clark Merritt, about shipping in Pensacola and bridges at 7:35 this morning.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. The search will resume this morning for six maintenance workers presumed killed in the collapse of the Key Bridge in Baltimore.
At this point, we do not know where they are, but we intend to give it our best effort to help these families find closure.
Maryland State Police Superintendent Roland Butler, a container ship slammed into the bridge after losing power. The judge in former President Trump's criminal case in New York issues a gag order barring him from publicly commenting on witnesses, prosecutors, court staff, and jurors.
Trump faces 34 charges of falsifying business records to conceal hush money payments made to adult film star Stormy Daniels. The defense team has argued any gag order would trample Trump's free speech rights.
Fox's C.B. Cotton in New York. One winning ticket is sold in New Jersey for a $1.1 billion Mega Millions lottery jackpot. The winning numbers 7, 11, 22, 29, 38, and the Mega Ball 4. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio, 92.3. It's 57 degrees, clear skies right now in Pensacola. The dean of the former dean of Warrington Middle School will avoid jail time after taking a plea deal related to soliciting a student for sex. According to the News Journal, Darielle Laster pleaded no contest to lewd or lascivious conduct with a person under 18 and contributing to the delinquency of a minor charges. While Laster won't be serving prison time, he is ordered to register as a sex offender and will have to serve 60 months on sex offender probation, as well as a year of community control. Well, there's a new candidate for a seat on the Escambia School Board with a familiar last name. Carissa Burgosh, the wife of First Judicial Circuit Court Judge Gary Burgosh, is now pre-filed for the District 4 seat. Burgosh currently works as the school liaison officer on board NAS Pensacola, helping military families with their schooling needs there. The District 4 seat is currently occupied by Patty Hightower, who so far has not decided whether she plans to seek re-election or retire. According to Studio 850, she expects to make that decision this June. The Santa Rosa School District cutting ties with an online tutoring service following concerns of alleged ties to China. While Tutor.com does maintain that they are an American company, their website does indicate that their parent company, Primavera Holdings Limited, is a firm owned by Chinese nationals. Yesterday, Florida Education Commissioner Manny Diaz sent a letter to school districts that said districts should not contract with companies that have ties to foreign countries of concern. According to Channel 3, the Santa Rosa School District leaders say their partnership is ending with that organization. Florida offering to help Baltimore as the city deals with that bridge collapse tragedy yesterday. Of course, six people missing, presumed dead after the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed yesterday morning. Governor DeSantis said he's directed emergency management officials to offer assistance to the state of Maryland if needed. He tweets that the state of Florida stands willing to help and our prayers are with the victims and the first responders. Meanwhile, the ships that normally use the Port of Baltimore may be rerouted to Florida. The Florida Ports Council CEO Michael Rubin tells Orlando's Eyewitness News that we have the capacity and the willingness to help. Well, a controversial Disney project is moving forward. The Orange County Commission voted yesterday to send an affordable housing project to the state for review. Disney wants to build over 1,000 affordable multifamily housing units in Horizon West, but it needs the county to approve a land use change. Residents who support and oppose the project showed up for the meeting. Supporters say the county needs more affordable housing. It is 5:34, News Radio 92.3, and let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
We will have plenty of sunshine today with a high near 74 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 50 degrees. Beautiful and a little breezy on Thursday. Sunny skies, high near 71. Thursday night, temperatures dropping near 48. Sunshine continues into Friday with a high near 72 and a low near 54. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
And right now, we've got 57 in Pensacola, 57 in Gulf Breeze, and just 2 degrees cooler, 55 in Milton. Your next news at 6. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
Hey, Pensacola. Get ready for a midday delight that'll have you hooked. Weekdays from 11 until 2 on News Radio Pensacola. Tune in to the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show. Jamie Markley, David Van Camp, and Scott Robbins are their dynamic trio that'll keep you entertained, informed, and laughing out loud during your lunch break. They dish out the hottest topics, bring you the latest news, and deliver their unique blend of humor and insight that'll have you coming back for more. It's the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show on News Radio Pensacola. 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru in Pensacola. Your road to adventure starts with the 2024 Subaru Outback and the 2024 Subaru Forester. Both come standard with symmetrical all-wheel drive for confidence along the way. The Subaru Outback, according to Kelley Blue Book, is one of the best family cars of 2023. And according to Auto Trader and my good friend Max here, the Subaru Forester is one of the 2023 best cars for dog lovers. For information on all the awards and accolades from Kelley Blue Book and Auto Trader on the Subaru brand, the Subaru Outback, and the Subaru Forester, visit KellyBlueBookKBB.com and AutoTrader.com. Whether you're a Forester family or an Outback family, your road to adventure starts in a Subaru. Get yours during the Subaru Lot to Love event. Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola, online at AndersonSubaru.com.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
Kelley Blue Book is a registered trademark of Kelley Blue Book Company, Incorporated. Auto Trader is a registered trademark and used with permission.
Hey, Kevin, how's the boat running?
Well, you know, last week I started working on the water pump, and now I can't remember how it goes back together.
Dude, stop. Call Key Marine. They'll get you and your Mercury outboard back in the water so we can go back to fishing again.
Key Marine gets the work done and lets you handle the fun. They'll fix any problem, big or small, even if the problem is you don't remember how the parts go back together. Key Marine, your Mercury outboard dealer on Bower Road in Pensacola.
Exciting news, the data revolution is on the rise once again. Data Revolution is seeking a second-tier engineer with at least 2 to 3 years of experience in IT, networks, voice over IP, and cybersecurity. Data Revolution's competitive salary is based on experience, and their comprehensive benefit packages include a medical stipend, matching 401k, flexible work hours, starting with 3 weeks of PTO, 10 paid holidays, profit sharing, and more. This is not remote or work from home. To learn more about this opportunity, send your resume to resume@datarevs.com.
Start your mornings off informed with all things Pensacola on the Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, 5:38 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Good to have you with us on this Wednesday morning. Yesterday, I had a chance to talk to Escambia Sheriff Chip Simmons, as we typically do on a Tuesday. Welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, Sheriff.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm doing great. We had a fair number of things in the news. One is you had an officer-involved shooting on Avery Street on Saturday. This was the one with the Z car, right, with the fare not getting paid, allegedly. Is that right?
Correct, yeah. We first got the call that a cab driver had been shot at,
and actually shot the window out of the cab. So we were in the area, along with Pensacola police officers, in the area circulating, looking for a suspect in that particular crime. And then there was actually a passerby, I've watched the body camera, that said he's right over there, indicating where the suspect would be. How they knew, or you know, if they saw it, I don't know, but they told us exactly where to go. So we went over there and we stopped. We had a couple of deputies stop a suspect that fit the description. They engaged in some conversation with him, asked him several times to keep your hands out of your pockets, keep your hands out of your pockets. And then at one point he fled. And then during that foot pursuit, the suspect turned towards the deputies and pointed a handgun at them. You know, as we said here plenty of times, you can't point a gun at us and expect prizes. Not good anyway.
Pointing a gun at somebody is an active threat of violence, deadly force.
It is reasonable to believe your life is in danger,
right,
or the life of someone else is in danger. So we shot a total of 12 rounds. I think three or so struck him, and then he was transported to the hospital, arrested. Yesterday, we finished the ballistics that matched the gun that was found on him at the scene to the shell casings that that matched that was shot, that shot the window out of the cab driver. So we'll be bringing those charges about on the cab driver. They were working on it yesterday evening, so it may be done by now, but otherwise we intend to charge him with the cab driver as well.
And the in that cab case, I think the allegation is he didn't pay his fare and the cabbie like was driving after him.
It was just following behind him.
Okay.
I'm assuming, you know, going to call law enforcement or trying to get his money.
And that's when he shot back. That's
when as the cab driver passed by, he fired three rounds and actually shot out the back window of the cab, you know, clearly looking to shoot at the cab driver himself.
And that back window would be past him then also. Not
yeah, yeah, as a, he drove past
no
him.
No way
right.
to construe that as a threat by the cabbie or anything like that. I mean, just trying to work through the scenarios. Mind, no. Did he ever actually shoot at our deputies, or did they shoot at him only when he pointed the gun?
My early indication is that he, as soon as he pointed the gun, he's running at the same time.
Got it.
And our deputies fired before he can get a round off.
And so policy in this case is that's an FDLE investigation, I assume, and the deputies who shot are waiting pending the outcome of that investigation before they can get back in the field, or?
Well, not necessarily. They're on paid administrative leave until we have a preliminary investigation internally.
Okay.
And then I can put them back to work after we send them to a mandatory psychological assessment. And then we will obviously wait and see what the Florida Department of Law Enforcement says. Actually, what they do is they investigate. They don't really say good or bad, right or wrong. What they do is they investigate it and they present those findings to the state attorney's office, who determines whether it's
got it,
you know, legal or not legal.
So it's the internal investigation that clears them to return to duty, the FDLE investigation then to the SA. The SA decides to prosecute or not, and that's how you know whether they've anything else is going to happen in the case.
That's correct. Yeah, okay. I could put them back to work within a couple of days once okay. I get the information. We send a lot of people out there in officer-involved shootings. We send a team, if you will, supervisors, captains, my chief deputy gets out there, and then they will assess the situation and provide a recommendation to me on when and if the deputy should be placed back on duty pending that mental assessment.
We also had a property that had been trouble over on our street wound up getting destroyed. You guys throw that down. Is that right?
Well, actually, the code enforcement
is
who did it. So I got to give credit where credit is due. They've done a really good job of working on some of these code violations. We have periodic meetings with them. We've really ramped up our engagement with the code enforcement so that we can share the information we get on nuisance properties, and they can help, you know, share the information they get on what violations take place. And then they were able to get a magistrate ordered that the destruction of the house itself. They don't take ownership of the property, is my understanding. We were just there to help and support in any way that we can. And I mentioned it before, and I'll say it again. The neighborhood is better because that particular home is, and it was a motor home that was in front of it, and that motor home was a site of a homicide that happened 2 weeks prior. So this has been a crap hole for a long time, and now it's gone.
There's a lot of cases where, you know, you have an otherwise pretty nice neighborhood, or decent enough, and then you got that one lot,
right?
And that one lot is the source of all the problems, all the complaints, all of the blight issues, whatever, and you know. Maybe a little raising of a home will solve a little bit of a problem, even if it's just a mobile home or something like that. Sheriff, I wanted to ask you about something that surprised me a little bit. I was watching the county commission meeting, and I was looking through the Escambia County Commission meeting last week and looking through all of the things they vote on. And, you know, there's a lot of what they call consent items, consent agenda, which is stuff they don't really detail much in public, but it's all the things that are so obvious that they vote on them unanimously. It's usually no big deal. The item that caught my attention was the Escambia Board of County Commissioners policy against the use of excessive force. And it has to do with federal funding. And it says they receive federal funding through the Community Development Block Grant, CDBG. You might have heard of this before. Right. I mean, people might have heard of it that way. And as a part of that, the an act of 1974 requires subrecipients of federal funds to adopt and enforce a policy prohibiting the use of excessive force by law enforcement agencies within its jurisdiction against any individuals engaged in nonviolent civil rights demonstrations. And it goes on with a couple of whereases. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Board of County Commissioners of Escambia County, Florida, it is the policy of the county to prohibit the use of excessive force by law enforcement agencies within its jurisdiction against any individuals engaged in nonviolent civil rights demonstrations and to enforce applicable state and local laws against physically barring entrance or exit from a facility or location which is the subject of such nonviolent civil rights demonstration within its jurisdiction with due and proper consideration given to the extent and limits of the county's power and authority to do so. And they signed it unanimously with a 3-0 vote because Jeff Bergosh was not there and District 4 was vacant. Did the county consult with you at all on this?
No, that's the first I've heard about this particular resolution, which is I find odd because we resolve to do that every day. We do not. We have a policy that would prohibit excessive use of force. I'm not sure why you need a resolution. I guess it's a little insulting in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, like insulting that they, because it seems to me like they have to do this as a condition of getting the grants. Okay, so
yeah, I don't take it personally.
Insulting by the commission or insulting by the White House?
I think it's insulting that it's even something that you have to do because you would think that that was already done. You know, why would a board of county commissioners or sheriff's office or any law enforcement entity condone any excessive use of force? I mean, why would you do that? It was established years ago.
Yeah, 1974, but they just had this vote last week, which I agree. It just seemed like, why would they need to take a vote like this? Apparently they felt like they had to, but it's such a silly thing to be telling you, yes, we are against you using unreasonable force in nonviolent civil rights demonstrations, and we'll enforce it.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of already well within your policies and procedures. You're there to protect people's civil rights and protest nonviolent, right?
You know, my assumption, again, is that it's mandatory that they do that so they can get the funding. And if they say they're against excessive use of force, aren't we all?
Right, aren't we all? I love that answer. I also did want to get your thoughts. There was a case out of New York, a very sad case, where a police officer in New York was involved in a traffic stop. As far as I can tell, it seemed like a fairly routine traffic stop. They tried to tell the guy to get out, and he opened fire and shot a cop who was wearing a vest and killed him. And, you know, they got him out of the car and subdued eventually. But a vest is not a magic protection, and any traffic stop can be anything, anytime, right?
Well, you know, there are times that I get complaints or my office gets complaints that people say, hey, I was in a traffic stop, and the deputy ordered me to stay in the car. You know, if there's a car full of people, they order us all to stay in the car. Well, because you don't know what's going to happen in some of these traffic stops. And all they're trying to do is stop you for speeding or stop you for some sort of a violation of the traffic laws. And anything can happen. You know, I've seen some body cam footage. I've seen some in-car footage. We've all seen them. If you go to YouTube, you can see all the ones that you want. But to find, you know, ones like that and to hear about them, it's heartbreaking, you know,
yeah,
for the deputy or for the officer and his family. But it also kind of reminds you that we should be very happy, and we are, in Escambia County to have men and women that are willing to do this job because they are stopping people. They do not know their mindset. They do not know if they're wanted or not. They don't know what their situation is. Again, we talk about the officer-involved shooting we had. We were investigating an individual that had fired rounds into a cab. It's at midnight or just before midnight. Deputies are out there on the streets, and they're not driving around, you know, killing time. They're actively trying to find these bad guys, and sometimes the people that they're trying to find or trying to stop with traffic are bad guys, genuine bad guys that have nothing but ill intent, and they don't care who they shoot, they don't care who they harm, and again, that's just an example of what law enforcement officers live with every day.
And that's why, I mean, you know, whenever I'm done with an interview with you or PPD or Sheriff Johnson or whatever, I always say thank you because, I mean, I do not take it for granted. I'm amazed about the things that people do to keep my family safe and protect us every day, and I appreciate it. Last thing, you had a very sad note. We had the passing of Deputy Sheriff First Class Al Calber on Sunday. Is that right?
Yeah, Al's a great guy. Anyone that knew Al, he's been with us for a long time. And he was a longtime school resource officer at a couple of different schools. And so a lot of people that had probably grown up and now they're hearing the story, and like, you know, that was their resource officer, because they take kind of ownership of their resource officer. Yeah. I hear people. I was never a resource officer, but because I was maybe a little bit before my time. Actually, it's not true, but there was not as many whenever I started. Al's done just a fantastic job. He had been battling an illness for some time. He has a wonderful family, and we've been working with him over the last couple of years. We're heartbroken about it. He has touched so many lives in such a positive manner, and he's certainly one of the good ones.
You also have an event coming up, Cops, Cars, and Crawfish, April 20th. We'll talk more about that when we get a little bit closer, but we're just under a month out from that. Chip Simmons, Escambia County Sheriff Chip Simmons, sir, as always, and I say it every time, thank you for keeping us safe. Thank you for keeping us informed. I appreciate the work, sir.
You bet. Y'all take care.
Absolutely. 550 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you're deciding whether to buy a home for the very first time or the second time or the 20th time or sell a home, you know, whatever you might be doing. But I really think about that new first-time buyer, because I know it's a big decision, and I know if you've been renting, you're kind of used to that, and I know there's a part of you that's frustrated that you're, you know, throwing all that money at the landlord and not throwing all that money at your own building fund of equity or whatever. But still, you know, there's a certain level of security and comfort and familiarity in renting. And you might be wondering, is this really for us? Is it the right time? Should we wait? Our price is going to come down, or, you know, interest rate's going to come down. What's really involved in buying? And all that kind of nebulous, vague, scared can just kind of keep you from acting. Well, let me give you a recommendation. If you've been thinking about this, you know, I'm trying to decide and going back and forth, call Christine Leavenworth and talk to her and tell her, I know Andrew's always talking about you. He says you're awesome. Can you come just talk to us and help us figure out what makes sense for us? And she will. And then you'll know. And then you can make a decision. And if you do wind up going ahead and buying, man, what a fantastic resource to have in your corner trying to buy for the very first time. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenrinke Realty, 723-9158.
When you were 18, you spent your spring break in Cancun. The party was legendary. And you speak of it often, even though you don't remember half of it. The geeky kid who sat across from you in math class stayed home, practicing calculus. You made fun of her. A lot. That is, until last year, when you owed the IRS a lot of money and called the certified public accountants at Benakis & Associates. And she answered the phone. Who's laughing now? The number crunchers at Benakis & Associates live and breathe accounting and tax preparation. It's practically in their DNA. When you need to know what the heck a Form 656-PPV is, call Benakis & Associates. When you need a QuickBooks Pro advisor, call Benakis & Associates. When you need someone who practices long division for fun, call Benakis & Associates. Now in the historic district on 120 South Alkanes and online at flacpas.com. Benakis & Associates. Leave the numbers to the experts.
Get ready to tantalize your taste buds with the all-new Coke. Introducing Coke Spiced. Picture this, the refreshing taste of Coca-Cola. Now with a twist, Coke Spiced takes your favorite soda to a whole new level. So why settle for ordinary when you can experience extraordinary? Enjoy a taste of the spiced side of life with the all-new Coke Spiced. With a delicious burst of raspberry and spiced flavors, grab a bottle of the all-new Coke Spiced today and spice up your life. Coke Spiced. Taste the excitement. Feel the flavor. Available now at your nearest store.
The Port of Pensacola is more than just a name. It's a powerhouse of economic opportunities, a strategic location that sparks growth and prosperity, contributing significantly to the local and regional economy with 23 incredible businesses that call this port home. Big names like C-Max Materials, GE Wind Energy, and soon the prestigious American Magic Sailing Team. Since 1754, the Port of Pensacola has been the driving force behind Northwest Florida's economic success. Explore more at portofpensacola.com.
You know what you want to do in retirement, but do you know how to get there? Tune in to What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair of Swan Capital, Saturdays at 1 to get answers to your retirement planning questions. Plan today so you can do all the things you've dreamt about doing in retirement. Don't miss What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair, Saturdays at 1. Firm offers insurance services. Advisory services offered through Swan Capital, LLC.
Pensacola Right Now with Joe and Austin. 4 to 7 on News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
If you only knew the power of the dark side.
And I'm just a big fan of Robert Plant's solo work. Some of the songs had hits, but I could listen to Robert Plant all the time. 5:54 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
Well, divers will continue searching for the six people presumed dead this morning after the cargo ship hit that Francis Scott Key Bridge in Maryland yesterday. The search for the missing bridge workers had to be suspended Tuesday night because of diminished visibility and treacherous currents in the Baltimore Harbor. The workers, of course, were thrown into the water early yesterday morning. The owner of the Patriots, apparently not happy with a recent documentary about his team, Robert Kraft, said at the annual league meeting on Tuesday he's disappointed at the portrayal of New England's championship teams in the documentary. Kraft mentioned the team's early Super Bowl victories and their 21-game winning streak as moments he hoped that documentary was going to spend more time on rather than putting all the emphasis on the negative controversies they've had over the last 20 years.
You mean somebody's disappointed that something that they believed in as a positive was focused on by a production documentary or news company in a negative way? That's so weird.
It's very odd.
It's almost like that's the first time that's ever happened in the history of America.
And oral arguments were presented at the Supreme Court on a case that could limit access to the abortion pill mifepristone. Justices are reviewing an appeals court decision blocking recent FDA changes that made the medication more widely available.
Can I tell you how this is going to get decided, even though I have not listened to the oral argument? I haven't recorded, but I haven't listened to them yet. Didn't have time yesterday.
Please do.
Yeah. No, they're going to decide that these doctors don't have standing. Because the doctors, the whole issue here is that you have these pro-life doctors who don't want to perform abortions and don't want to prescribe abortion or abortifacients or abortion drugs like mifepristone. And of course, they can do that. They don't have to do any of that stuff. And now they have sued because on the chance that a woman takes mifepristone and then has health complications, which does happen in a very, very small minority of cases, they might be in a position where they would have to treat her, or might be that they would have to perform an emergency abortion against their conscience in order to give her the best health care that she needs at that time. This is so unlikely to ever actually happen that literally any doctor of any viewpoint might, under this mechanism, be able to bring a legal opposition to almost any ruling or decision imaginable. I haven't listened to the oral arguments. I've read some of the summaries of it. Amy Howitt, Howe in the Court is fantastic on this stuff. She always gets it right. And her analysis is, oh, yeah, standing is going to be a big problem. And it was. It was like 90% of the argument was standing, that they don't have standing. And standing, remember, you have to actually be harmed by something before you can bring a lawsuit. It's one of the pillar concepts, key foundational concepts of our legal system. So I think that's what's going to happen. They may have some notes about, class prohibitions on something when a lawsuit is being brought so that nobody can get it, as opposed to just a very small number of litigants prohibiting a certain small number of people from doing it. But that's how I think it's going to turn out. But we'll see. You got to let them actually play the game. So 5:57 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Kind of interesting. Glenn Youngkin in Virginia, the Republican governor, has vetoed like 40 bills that the legislature sent him dealing with gun control. So they send him a whole bunch of bills, and he says, no, 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 no. I mean, seriously, a whole bunch of bills. Sorry, excuse me, not 40, 30 bills, 30 gun control bills, including things like a prohibition on so-called assault firearms. There was a one that would require state police to establish a red flag law tracking system. That's when you prohibit people from owning a gun, out of concern that they're a danger to take away their guns. There'd be one where there would be a 5-day waiting period for gun purchases once you've agreed to the background check. There's one that would have banned guns on college campuses. So sometimes in Virginia, you can take a gun to a college campus. So they, even though they have much greater restrictions on gun ownership and possession than we have in Florida, this is one that apparently they're actually ahead of us on liberty, because at least in some cases, now the colleges can still prohibit it themselves, but apparently there's no statewide rule. They wanted to make it a statewide rule. Here you can't take it to any school, which I think is a silly, silly rule. But lots of restrictions on guns here are silly. The one thing that he would have actually, he did actually sign a couple into law. One is prohibiting parents from willfully allowing their children to possess firearms if they pose a credible threat of violence. That's been in the news a lot lately. And the other prevents the manufacturer transfer possession of devices to convert them to fully automatic or simulated automatic, like the Glock switch, for example.
Listen on air at 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3, WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.